Welcome to the 2012 Imagine Community Forum with your host, Imagine CEO, Mark Emery.
A little bit of reflection for what's been going on. We have a couple of members of our board of directors are here right now, if you wouldn't mind raising your hand. So if anybody has questions of them later in the evening, we have our monthly board meeting at 7 o'clock, and it's a public meeting. Anybody who wants to stick around for that is certainly welcome. Also, we have a number of staff members that are in the room. Probably most of the people in the room, part of Imagine. And I want to recognize them and our network of providers. We have over 50 program-approved service agencies available to individuals with developmental disabilities in our service area to pick from, as well as our other service areas, early intervention, the Autism Spectrum Disorder Program, CES. Some of the other programs have over 150 small businesses and independent contractors that they can choose from. So we have a really solid network of providers when you think about it. It's not that big of an area, so plenty of choice for people when they have their allocations and their services available to them. They get to pick and choose where they want to get them. The last few years have been pretty difficult, not just the economy. We've obviously had to struggle through some economic challenges, and I hear that we're slowly going to climb out of that, which would be nice. But we've also had our challenges within our service delivery mechanisms. Specifically, when we shifted in 2009 to a fee-for-service, that became a really difficult thing for the state to manage. Lots and lots of people that we had been over-serving couldn't get services anymore. We were trying to understand how this was going to be operating in a fee-for-service model. It took a couple of years to do that. There were gigantic shortfalls in the state system across the board in the state. Fewer people getting fewer services, and it has been very much predetermined what those services can look like instead of what people really need, which is a knowing that we've had that problem and knowing that we have, and I have to thank the staff for keeping Imagine sort of on top of these changes that have been going on and how we've been able to navigate the system in the best way we possibly can for our end users, our clients and families receiving services. It has not been easy, and I know a lot of people haven't really been able to get the services that they think are most important for their family member. So what's next? This is a good segue into something that I was really proud to participate in, the Focus on the Future project that was driven by Alliance. Alliance was actually a terrific vehicle to move this project along. It's a grassroots project that involved lots and lots of people across the state and beyond, and I'll bring that up in a minute. The idea is that we know that long-term care was changing, and it had struggled for the last few years. And we know the state has been considering some changes for a better system, something that was more sustainable, better use of the dollars that are available. And we didn't sense, from an Alliance standpoint, that there was enough opportunity for stakeholder input. For those online, I'm up to slide 6. This is who Alliance is. It's basically a large number of service providers in the state, probably 25 to 30 of them, and the community center boards, all 20 of the community center boards are members of Alliance now. And just really quickly, don't have to read through this, but I just wanted to let you know that people were brought in, subject matter experts were brought in from outside the state of Colorado, experts on waivers, experts on self-directed services. Rick Zaharia was an expert on managed care, came up from Arizona. And Wanda Seiler, who was the facilitator of this project, which is been in place now for almost a year. Wanda actually had her background was also as the director of a state, I think it was South Dakota, of the Developmental Disabilities Service System in that state. So she had a great deal of background to work with besides being a terrific facilitator. It started out with focus groups across the state. There were 5. In our area, we were the North Denver metro area. We had a great deal of help from Debbie Spencer and Elsa Wanacott from the ACL, helping to put together who would make up the members of the focus group. And then we got to make sure it was held in a really neutral location. Mental Health Partners offered their space in Longmont for us to use. And so I was the Alliance contact, and then Debbie and Elsa assisted in setting up, selecting who was going to be in the group, and making sure that the focus group went off as scheduled. Demographics across the state, mostly self-advocates and families, a few other stakeholders, the age range, the medium range, median range. So what we learned across the state became very interesting over the course of that week. And it was a single week that those five focus groups were held. Wanda Seiler was at each one of them, as well as one representative who was the project lead from Alliance. These were the common themes that came out of it. And I'm skipping over a lot of the details that had to go into place to make this happen, to not make it too long of a story, but these were the common themes that came up in the focus groups, and more specifically on each one of them. Service system access was a problem. Particularly, this was a big deal in the rural areas where they had trouble accessing services. Obviously, we know the wait list is way too long, and you can just, those of you that have been in these situations know that there's lots and lots of problems with the access to the system that we have in place. It's complex, it's difficult to navigate, people don't know where to go, families are relying on other families. That's not the kind of system that we want in Colorado, and what we were doing was gathering this grassroots support and information to get it into a format that we could then communicate to others about what the problems might be in the state. The state system took a great deal of criticism, and I don't think this was any particular surprise, but the division, Department of Healthcare Policy and Finance, Department of Public Health and Environment, and the Department of Human Services were pretty roughed up by the public and during these focus group sessions. I know and work with people in these departments. These are nice people, but it's what they have is a very complex system that has been pieced together over the course of a few decades, and it just isn't working well together. Changes that come out of the departments are not well planned. I mean, these are things that we've talked about over the course of several years, but now it's coming not from a community center board and not from a service provider, but it's coming from the public, and the public that wants to use the system and have it work better for them. The provider capacity out of the work groups, actually the comments were quite the opposite. The public is actually quite satisfied with service providers for the most part, and quite satisfied with community center boards for the most part, and very satisfied with the advocacy groups. Many of the things that they heard in each of the forums were the same, and I'm moving on to slide 16. What the public wants is no surprise. Person-centered planning, self-directed services, lots more employment options. Across the state, these are the common themes that kept coming up. Understanding the importance of social roles. These are things that are not a surprise to us, but you can see when that's important and you have a fee-for-service system that's very defined about what you can get, they don't line up very well. This is more an issue, the health and wellness piece in the rural areas than it might be in the Front Range and larger metropolitan areas. As I mentioned before, advocacy, the comments about the ARCs and the local ACL, extremely positive. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I think the advocacy that was recognized was essential. Oftentimes, the advocacy groups feel like they have the leadership of the advocacies that can go to the state and have a voice, but the end users, the families, they just don't have the time to do that. They're already wrapped up with their kids Being that active advocate is more difficult, so they rely heavily on the organizations. What followed that? So that's what came out of that one week of information, and it was all gathered together and put into a focus group report. Then a work group was assembled, and that work group was made up of Alliance members, like myself, and then this list, and again, it's not important necessarily the names on the list, but look at the organizations that were represented. The ARCs, the Legal Center, who ended up dropping out about halfway through. Parents, many members of the state staff, Office of State Planning and Budgeting, Healthcare Policy and Finance. So they had their staff members in these work groups, along with our subject matter experts that came in from outside the state, and some selected members of Alliance. I happened to be one of them, and I was very proud to be there representing our area. The problems that were recognized were not a surprise. It's too complex. We have too many mechanisms. We don't have the data infrastructure to be able to make changes in a smart way. The complexities were one of the biggest issues. We have 11 waivers, and you know that, you know, when you're on a wait list for one, you go get service out of another one, but that doesn't really meet your needs, and some of them have unlimited access to services, the ones they don't really want, and others that you really want to get into have long wait lists. System doesn't really focus on the end user. Again, the person-centered planning, people trying to fit into these funding streams instead of having the funding streams to fit them. A lot of the solutions that were coming out were on this list, and we're on slide 25. Treat people holistically is one of those things that probably never would have expected out of my mouth if I was talking 10 or 15 years ago, because I probably wouldn't have said that. But watching what happened in the fee-for-service system told me right off the bat that we cannot be that cut and dried. We have to be able to look at individual needs and be able to address those needs and let those needs be driven by people who know the individuals the best, and that's typically the families. Restore some trust into a system that hasn't really done right by people to this point. The infrastructure hasn't been there in a way that it works for end users and people with disabilities. The stories that were being told in some of the focus groups about how people had to, felt that they had to beat the system in order to get the services that they want. To have somebody in public come out and say that tells us a great deal about what kind of a system we have in place in Colorado. Again, self-directed services was huge. Let people take some risks. I mean, these are all of the things that are coming out, and so the work groups, with the outside help, the experts that are with the knowledge they have about waivers and the knowledge they have about self-directed services and the knowledge they have about managed care systems in other states, would tell you that we don't have to look like this in Colorado. So the timing of this project was really, it was serendipitous that we started to see things happen in a negative way with the fee-for-service system. The state was open to new ideas. We went to the public and asked for that great deal of information to bring back to the state and say, here's what your public thinks. Here's what should work for them. Can't we write waivers and put a service system in place that will work for the public? Clearly, the resource allocation isn't really working. The fee-for-service part of it, the 11 waivers are a problem. The comp service, SLS service debate, when you're offered a comp slot, you sure as heck can't turn it away because you may never be offered that one again. Whether you need it or not really isn't a question that's ever asked. I'm on slide 29. The transparency that I think is most people are asking for shouldn't even be something that we have to question. It should be in place all the time. Least restrictive environments has been talked about for decades. People shouldn't have to relinquish custody of the children to get services. That's speaking specifically to the CHIRP waiver and foster care system. There's been a great deal of work done in that system to be able to present a great body of work, to present to the Department of Human Services new solutions for that. That has been sitting on the desk of the director of the department from the previous administration. So work has been done, it just hasn't been taken a hold of and put into place. Build a sustainable service system. The other piece, we work with multiple data systems within the state. They don't talk to one another very well. gathering quality information about the needs that people have is very, very difficult for the state to do. Each of the service areas has their own systems of gathering information and figuring out what is the real need. What is the real demand on the state? Very difficult to get the kind of information we need, and very difficult to interact in a way that quality information is available for the state to make good decisions on how do we best use the resources that we have. Some of the considerations that came out of the work groups, and now we're, the timeline on this was we're into late October now, when we have been looking at considerations that could help structurally assist the state get into a better situation, and then the group put some specific recommendations in place. But these were the considerations. No secret, 11 waivers in the state. I forget how many of them have to do specifically with intellectual or developmental disabilities. We operate a number of them, but there's a couple outside of the Community Center Board's responsibilities. They could be combined and reduce the complexity. We're recommending out of this group that the ones that get considered for consolidation only have to do with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Later on, I'll explain where that might not be with the way the state looks at it. Managed care. Prior to 2009, we had a pseudo-managed care system in place where blocked money would come to the community center boards, and then it was sort of managed here. It operated really well for the end users because we were able to overserve by so many people, and the services weren't so restricted, but that didn't really meet the federal government's requirements, so we could no longer go in that direction, at least for the time being. Now, other states right now are jumping all over the managed care bandwagon. Arizona was the one that we studied during this project, and they combine managed care for long-term services for folks with developmental disabilities in conjunction with their medical needs, their acute care needs. Doable? Yes. They like what they have going on in Arizona, but they haven't really had anything else to compare it to. That's all they've ever done. Many other states are jumping on the managed care bandwagon, including acute care. I think from our standpoint, that's pretty risky business, but we don't know enough about it really to conclude that. 1115 demonstration waivers, basically those are waivers that go in place as a demonstration for 5 years, yet what we found out is states that put those in place repeat them over and over and over again. It's no longer a demonstration waiver, but that's just what they call it. And it offers tons of flexibility. The state can write anything they want to into that. It will likely be accepted by the federal government, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Whatever we do has to address the wait list, long overdue, and it has to support self-directed services. This is still what's coming out of this project. The recommendations, not a surprise, there was a list here, pretty easy to identify some of them. We have put together champion groups to work on each one of these recommendations. Data systems are a part of it, accessing good information. We know the end users, families that are in locations where they can't get good information. It doesn't come out very quickly and easily from the state on what the rules are to the game. We need to streamline compliance. We have this multiple service industry, multiple oversight from three different departments right now. So one department, for example, oversees licensing. Specifically for homes and home care. The healthcare policy and financing is the funding mechanism that can only talk to they're the only ones that talk to the federal government. And then the program is currently operated out of the Department of Human Services. So they tell us what the rules are. HCPF has their own rules. Public health has their own rules. Sometimes they conflict. We can't ever be right. Is that necessary? Probably not. Employment services need to come back on the table as an important thing. Behavioral supports, as we've learned, have been cut back a little bit this year. Person-centered planning is a must, and collaboration with education so we don't have this cliff at the end of education is a must. If you're interested in more about this project, it is ongoing. It has a fair amount of traction. I was among a group that presented it to the Joint Budget Committee in December. They were very excited about what they heard because it was the best, and this is my words, it was the best example of mass collaboration on an effort like this in Colorado since I have lived here, which has been, seems like forever. But to have the advocacy groups, to have the parents, to have service providers, to have state employees all in these work groups with some experts from outside the state coming up with solutions was the best project. And I had no idea it would turn out this good when I first agreed to participate with it. If you don't know enough about it, I recommend you get the final report. All of that is available at Alliance's website there at the bottom. This, what was repeated several times when we were doing the presentation to the Joint Budget Committee, the Legislative Joint Budget Committee, was each person that was involved in that presentation expressed how proud they were to work on this project, because there wasn't any turf in the room. It was, what are we going to do for the citizens of Colorado who need this kind of support? When is this going to change? So that's project one that I want to talk about. Project two is our Boulder County initiative. And this is specifically for Boulder County. It is how we are using some of the local funds from Boulder County. And what we've recognized in the last few years is the state has not been able to keep up with the growing need in adult services. So what we've looked at is people as they age into adult life, they're still eligible for family support services if they're still living with their family or guardian. As that number keeps growing, we used to target a lot of the family support effort to adolescents. It's what carried families from early intervention on up through adult services. Now with the adult service waitlist growing as fast as it is, we haven't been able to keep up. The system we had in place for family services was not nearly as accountable as we needed or wanted. And we also thought that it wasn't addressing what's important to families. So we thought we would flip the idea of services on its head. Medicaid is built around a deficit model. Medicaid will come in and your benefits come into play when there's a problem, when something's wrong, when something needs to be fixed. Instead of what do you do when somebody has a strength and you want to build on that strength so they can be more successful with their life. Medicaid won't pay for that. They'll only pay for what's wrong, which is just the opposite of maybe what needs to be in place. So with local funds, we don't have the same kind of restrictions that are put in place by the federal government and the state of Colorado. So we flipped it. The second bullet up here on slide 36 talks about how we were going to figure out what the demand was on our service, or the demand on services if it was state-funded services. When a person is finally works their way up through the wait list and is awarded an adult resource, whether it's in supported living services or a comprehensive waiver, the HCBDD waiver, that's when the state implements, through the local community center boards, the assessment, the supports intensity scale. But that's not done on people on the wait list. It's only done when you finally get to the point on the wait list where you're awarded a resource. The problem with that, in my mind, is that it doesn't tell us what the real need is in Colorado. All we can talk about is a number, and we've heard 12,000, we've heard 8,000, thousands of people are on the wait list. But we really don't know what that need is. All you know is a number. We thought locally we would say, okay, let's implement the supports intensity scale to everybody who would be willing to allow us to do that on the adult wait list in Boulder County, and find out what the demand really is. And some of the results was, and we also added in our own family analysis survey, which gave us better information. The supports intensity scale doesn't really do what we all wish it would. It is the one common thing that the state uses across the board, but not for everybody that's eligible, only if you're enrolled. We wanted to look at everybody that's eligible. So we have implemented that. And we wanted to make sure that what we were addressing was what was important to families, not what the rules and regulations said they had to take. So in this process, we identified 184 people who are eligible for services and over the age of 18, and that changes by the day, in Boulder County. 80 families and individuals agreed to participate with the assessment. We have another 29 that are in process that likely will be going through the assessment process. We're still researching about 14 families, trying to make our connection in place. And then we had about 61 who we either couldn't find, didn't respond, or were not interested, which is about a third of that group. And then we see what our growth is expected to be this year. This is the result of the assessment. And the ratings, those of you who are familiar with this, you know you can be rated 1 to 6, and there's actually used to be a 7 that kind of went away. But so you can be awarded a level of need. That's basically what that means. And what we found out is those that are eligible and interested in having services, it's heavily weighted over on the low end. And if you know how the state's funding services, that's not that expensive. It's the 4, 5, and 6s and 7s that are really expensive. That's the way they allocate the funds out, and that's how they set rates for services. In our catchment area, this is what the CIS score looks like for those that are enrolled in adult services in SLS and comp. I'm going to back up. I'm on 38 and 39. There's what we found out from the wait list, or what's called a wait list, and that's what's enrolled. So in the state, if they ever did take this out statewide, we make up about 6.5 to 7%, and if you minus Broomfield, it's probably a little less than that. We could extrapolate and give some idea of what the demand would be on the state system. But only in Boulder County have we done this. The state isn't in a position, or do they have the resources to be able to do this kind of assessment. So what we learned is maybe it's not going to be as expensive as everybody's afraid of. No need to be afraid. Maybe we do have enough money. I don't know. The next piece to the plan was how we were going to proceed. And a big part of this initiative is to have a navigator interact with families in a way that we have several variables that we now understand. We have an assessment that's done. We've done a survey. We're going to have a navigator visit with a family and find out what kind of natural supports they have in place, what other kind of systems are they accessing right now that may be locally or state funded, and what's important. What can we address? Knowing that we've set aside a good deal of resources to address whatever that might be. We found out by surveying the families, this is where their interests are. Employment's huge, top of the pile. That's the 29%. The 25% is social and peer community activities. Independent living skills, 19%. So these are the big five chunks. There were many, many, many other things that families said were important, but they didn't come out in a big chunk fashion like this. So these were the top five. And there's lots of more, but this tells us then from the service end, what kinds of things need to be put in place by our providers to be able to address those needs. This little slide is kind of interesting to me because it's split right down the middle like this. And on the top half represents either people that can sustain their current circumstances for 3 years or less, or they're so unsure they don't know. So out of that group, we have to understand that about half of them will need something sooner rather than later. The bottom half are 4 years out to indefinitely. Now, indefinitely, we know there's a definitely at some point, but the answer in the surveys was indefinitely, 28% of the families say we're okay. A pretty interesting point, but knowing this helps us to be able to better address the limited resources that we have locally while folks are waiting for some state-funded services. And in the end, we actually want to just recognize that this is a growing need. The number of people that we'll be addressing with this Boulder County initiative is going to continue to grow every year because the way the state is designed right now, it cannot keep up. And we want to address what's important to the individual and family, not what Medicaid says this person should be getting. We'd rather get what the individual and family say they need to have the most effect on their lives. That was my second topic. My last topic before we chat is about what's going on at the state level. I'm on slide 44. Last spring, during the legislative session, a member of the Joint Budget Committee asked the Department of Human Services, because the Joint Budget Committee was pretty upset that they had over $30 to $35 million shortfall last year, basically because of the fee-for-service system that can't be managed. And abruptly, the request to the Department of Human Services was, should this service delivery system be moved away from the Department of Human Services over to the Department of Healthcare Policy and Finance, who manages benefits? Could they do a better job? And they did a request for information, which is essentially requiring them to come back, the departments to come back with a report in November to the Joint Budget Committee with their findings. Literally, should this program serving people with developmental disabilities move or not? And in that request, they said, and we want you to work with the community center boards across the state to determine whether or not that should happen. The governor interrupted that request during the summer and said, I want you to the department heads to find the most effective, efficient way to deliver these services. And if that means moving the Division for Developmental Disabilities, then do so. Then recommend that back to the Joint Budget Committee. Don't talk to the community center boards about it. It's not their place. In November, the Departments of Human Service and Department of Healthcare Policy and Finance announced that they would be moving the operation of these services, these three bulleted services at the top, from the Department of Human Services to Healthcare Policy and Finance. It wasn't a suggestion. It wasn't a recommendation. It was an announcement. That announcement requires legislation, because currently in statute, it is directed that these services will be managed out of the Department of Human Services. Now, this sounds simple. And I'll describe the three bullets. The Division for Developmental Disabilities operates the waivers we're familiar with, supported living services, adult DD, the COMP waiver. It operates family support services. It operates early intervention. It operates the children's extensive support waiver. The middle bullet is politely called the CHIRP waiver. That's the Children's Rehabilitation Residential Program. That's operated out of child welfare through the counties. That is foster care placement for kids with developmental disabilities if they are funded through a Medicaid waiver. There are also some kids that are not funded through Medicaid waiver. They're funded through state general fund and county funds through the foster care program. And then the third bullet is the state unit on aging that they would pick up and move. So these are three relatively different programs to pick up and move. It matters a lot how this happens. And there's a great deal of discussion and debate going on across the state on how this happens, should it happen, and the deadline that they put in place was this July 1st. And since then, they have started to actually cohabitate some of the employees. It's a $400 million worth of programs and about 50 employees to start to train with the new department and understand how things will change. While that's happening, the department heads realize that they require legislation to make this move. So the governor's office and the appointed directors of the two departments are now starting to work with legislation to say, you've got to get this done because we have to move by July 1st. They've held public forums across the state, what's considered public forums, whether you've heard about them or not, and basically described what the benefits are to making this kind of a move. I can list a couple possible benefits. One is healthcare policy and finance is the agency in the state that is the Medicaid agency. They are the only ones that can communicate directly with the federal government's Centers for Medicaid and Medicare. They're the ones that approve the waivers in both ends, the state and federal government. Healthcare policy and finance, historically up to this point, has been a benefits management agency for the state, for Medicaid. Simply put, from my viewpoint, that's like an insurance company. They pay benefits to you. The Department of Human Services is the operation of that program up until this point. When I'll personalize this story just a little bit, because then I'll start to tell you what I'm concerned about. I have State Farm insurance on my house, and I had a little wind damage on my house the last couple of weeks. You remember the 100-mile-an-hour winds and blew a few shingles off my roof. I call up my agent that I've known for years. Said, I lost a few shingles on the roof. And he goes, no problem, we'll take care of you. And I said, I was just looking at my policy, and it said my deductible on my house was $500. And he said, used to be. And I said, really? He said, yeah, we changed that in June of this year. And I said, really? How much did I save? He said, nothing. And I said, that's disappointing to hear. Thank you for the news. And he said, you probably received an email about it. And I said, I probably did. Thank you for letting me know that. Not only is there interest in, you know, State Farm's interest is in State Farm's, not so interested in me in the house. This step would not only have that, it would mean that State Farm's going to come and repair my house. They would be the operations of it. That's one of the concerns that I have. When you look at the benefits management, whose incentive is to basically keep things in control, also operating the service, is that a risk to the end user? In my mind, that is a reasonable risk to be concerned about. We don't know that that's what the end will look like. We would like the state to put in place the end result for what they're trying to accomplish. What are they trying to achieve? Tell us what that is, which we cannot seem to get a handle on, and then tell us how we're going to get there. And when we get that, then we would say, that makes sense. Let's move what's not working right now to the new department. Ensure for us, though, that the benefits management portion of it is not going to be the one that's operating the program. I want to see that conflict go away. I want to see that separation. I want to see that maybe there's a commission like the insurance commission. I want to see that there's somebody looking out for those on the wait list, those in services, that the design of the services is working for them, not working for the benefits management part. We don't know if the end could actually come out so it's better. It possibly could. I'd like to know that before we make the move. The idea and the work that's being done on this is moving very, very, very quickly. It will require the approval of your legislators to make that happen. Imagine communicated with our legislators in December that we're concerned because we can't seem to understand what this will look like in the end. We'd like to know that recognized states' most vulnerable population, the citizens who make up those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, are not going to be injured, hurt by this move, that there are not going to be unintended consequences that we saw with the fee-for-service system, that there are not going to be unintended consequences like we saw with the recent home care allowance debacle that happened last year through the department's move in legislation. We want to know that this is a thoughtful process and that the end result is going to be better than what we're experiencing right now. We want some look at what the stakeholders have already told you through the Focus on the Future project of what they want in the end. Include that into thinking in the process. While we're doing that, can we get it done in 2 months, 3 months before July 1st? Wouldn't it be great? But I just haven't had that experience in the state of Colorado that things are moving that quickly. So on the one hand, we have a great potential for better communication with the federal government, better waivers, possibly more resources, but possibly not, possibly rate cuts. There's all kinds of possibilities. And then when you start looking at which waivers should be consolidated? When they were reporting to the Joint Budget Committee, they were talking about, well, we'll include children with special needs, and we're going to include mental health, and we're going to include aging. We're just going to put all the money together, and then we'll figure out after that. That's not convincing to me. I want to know that it's calculated. I want to know that it's planned. I want to know that we've got an end goal in mind, and that we will strategically move toward that end goal, to that end goal. If I had tried to present something to our board of directors that just said, hey, you know what I'm thinking? We're going to take everything in that building over there and move it over here, and we're going to take everything over here and move it over there because, you know what, the light bill will go down. You know, the board would go, you've got to be nuts, and guess what, you don't have a job anymore. The last little piece down here on slide 44 is early intervention. Currently, the early intervention program is managed out of the Division for Developmental Disabilities. It is not really, in our estimation, not really experiencing any problems. We're not running short on money. All the kids in our catchment area are receiving the services they should, and there's really good results. And statewide, statistically, 38%, which means 62% of the children that are enrolled in that service and come out at age 3 do not continue into services for developmental disabilities. So that tells you that a great number of kids actually are successful in that program and should be, and it's a very important program for that reason. 38% we will know for the rest of their lives in whatever the catchment area they're in. There's legislation in place, again being pushed out of the governor's office, to move this service into and be managed in a new Office of Early Childhood Development within Department of Human Services, which might not be a problem, probably isn't a problem. We don't really know. It doesn't require legislation to move it there, yet the governor's staff is insisting on the legislation including early intervention. They could just move it over there and that would be the end of it. Why put it into law? Because later on you might want to move it. You might want to say there's other ways to fund this. You might want to keep it closer to the developmental disability system, which is already being proposed to move to another department, and having lots and lots of problems that go along with that. Probably won't affect the end user. Children won't notice this. Families probably won't notice this, at least initially. We just don't know long term what it's going to mean. The legislation that we've had in place for the last 50 years to organize these services doesn't really have problems in it. Yet, we're looking at some significant changes in that legislation and how this stuff is organized at the state level without the plan in place that we think is important before you make a move like that. But that's just the way we're looking at it. Those are my three topics. Oh, I have a couple other things. The governor's budget proposal for next year, 173 new resources, a lot for children transitioning into adult services, both for CES and the kids coming out of foster care. Some emergency resources. Right now, the state has an emergency wait list for emergency services around 65 people. Currently, right now, 2011-12 budget, we're $8.7 million shortfall. Some of the suggestions from the department are listed there. There's 300 resources that have been allocated to the departments that won't be filled because they can't afford it. The governor's proposing another 170 next year. What does that mean? It doesn't sound good. Caps on targeted case management. If if you hit the cap on targeted case management, that means that your case management service provider, which is now Imagine, won't be paid anymore. We promise we won't stop delivering services. Caps on debilitation services, it's currently, I think, at a level of 50 weeks a year, not 52, 4 days a week, not five. We've narrowed the definition of behavioral services, so regardless of what the need is, you can't get it without it, at least it can't be paid for. And I don't know if we conducted audits on CISs yet. Leslie, are we doing CIS audits? There we go. The budget's proposed new resources will go in front of the Joint Budget Committee next month. The Joint Budget Committee actually does the approval of those. Right now, we have a pretty good feeling about that, so we will continue to lobby to have those approved. What would you like to talk about? I know it's a lot, but three topics. They're most on my mind, and I'm sure you may have some of your own. We did get a couple of questions in beforehand, but I'll... yes, ma'am. You're right. The question is about the Boulder County Initiative, how it's funded. It is funded by mill levy dollars from Boulder County. It has fluctuated in the $5 million and change area. And how much of that, I'm just repeating the question for those online, how much of that is going into the focus on the Boulder County Initiative? And in the last few years, we've put about $1 million into Family Support Services, and Jan, what's our target for the Boulder County Initiative, or John? $500,000 to $600,000. So half to $500,000 to $600,000 of the $1 million that we've targeted typically for Family Support Services. Yeah. Joe? I'm sorry? Did I say Weld? If I did, I apologize. Boulder County.
Okay.
Thank you, Joe. Other question? I've got a couple up here that came into us earlier. The first question that came to us up here was about protecting identity. And, of course, the way a lot of our information is kept these days in electronic databases. First, start with anything that's kept on paper is locked and kept away. I'm not a big fan of paper. Everybody here knows that I work with. But the other data systems that we work with do contain a great deal of very important information, Medicaid numbers there, Social Security numbers, and lots of other details about personal lives. We interact with three state data systems, which we really don't have control over. However, they are managed similar to ours, that it is username and password protected. Our primary data system is a cloud-based system called NetSuite, and it is also username and password protected, and access to certain information is based on a need to know. If we have HIPAA policies that we have to have in place, we have reporting mandates that we have in place. Should we have a breach, we might not find out about it, just like with any data system, whether you're a banking system or something else, you may find out about it first before we would find out about it. Once that's known, we have the capability of going back into our system and identifying where the breach was and who the culprit was. We're looking at also going this year at secured email systems so that we can get documents out to exchange documents with the state and also get documents out to families in a secure manner that would allow for things you would typically fax into us to be done via an email system. Typical email is not secure enough to do that. So I hope I've hit that question. The second question was how will people receiving long-term care be affected by the organizational change in authority? And I suspect this means with the proposed move from the division of Developmental Disabilities over to Healthcare Policy and Finance. And my best guess, because we seem to have a difficult time getting really good information, my best guess and hope is that people will not notice a difference if they're enrolled in the service right now, at least for the final 2 years of the waivers we have in place. So the SLS waiver, the CES waiver, and the COMP waiver last 5 years. They will end and be typically renewed in 2014. The state does not have to wait that long to renew them and rewrite them. I don't know that the state knows that. They might decide to start rewriting now. I haven't seen any evidence of that. Or they might wait them out through 2014. At that point, I think I'm comfortable guaranteeing you there will be a significant change in how services are managed and delivered in Colorado. I would tend to lean toward it likely will be a managed care of some kind. Whether or not that includes acute care, medical needs, is unknown. Whether or not that everyone that's eligible will be receiving services is unknown. We don't need to do that in a managed care model, but some do. Does that mean, there could be many, many changes involved in those waivers and how they're rewritten. My guess is that it'll be lots and lots more flexible, lots more self-directed services. So looking at what change will we see, my prediction is very little in the next 2 years other than restricted, trying to keep the budget in control. There'll be, if anything, there'll be things will be cut back more or rates will be cut, which would be problematic for us and the providers in our network. We have seen a 4.5% cut in rates last year, and at the same time, according to the state, we have seen a 4.5% increase in the cost of doing businesses, net change 9%. We have to keep creating magic to be able to make ends meet. So that's not a pretty picture if we were possibly looking at another rate cut. We feel that the legislators are understanding that and would not allow that to happen, although it's not within our control. SLS, I don't think we'll see significant change in these next 2 years, nor would I expect any significant change in the comprehensive waiver, nor the CES waiver. After that, we'll have to wait and see. I'd love to know what's going to happen next there. And we're helping to influence that in a good way if we're allowed to do that, and I think we will be allowed to help with that. Any other questions? Something other than this, something fun. Concerns, something that I can tell somebody else if I had the opportunity. Joe. The risk of privacy?
Yeah.
No, actually, we've been pretty good. I think it's reasonable to be concerned about it. The question is about, is the risk of privacy a concern for us? And we should keep it in the back of our minds. We should be on top of our data systems. We should be on top of who gets access to that kind of information. I think we're doing a pretty good job there. It's not that we haven't ever had a breach, but we're doing pretty darn well there. I would love to see us develop further because our system is capable of having families access into their own records of their sons and daughters, and I would like to see us expand that more than we have already. I think we will be seeing that more. I mean, the tools we use are far more powerful than what we have put in place so far, but that sort of thing has to be rolled out slowly, take time, make sure we don't make any mistakes. If we make mistakes, to make them really quick and get them corrected fast. So. Yeah, a little more access would be nice as long as we can keep the serious information protected. Well, I'm done. I'm just about on schedule, too. Our board meeting starts at 7 o'clock. It's a public meeting. Everyone's welcome to be there. Thanks for coming, and I hope to see you again next year.